This is Scott Allen from odecode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Coon from lazycoder.com.
Welcome to this week's edition of Herding Code. This edition is being recorded on February 10th, 2009, and the topic for tonight is having fun at the workplace. So we wanted to talk about some things that happen amongst other developers, that between developers or between different people in your companies, that where you might have pulled a prank or just done something to have some fun, something interesting you did for a release party maybe. I guess I could kick things off. John's always bringing up the thing I did with HP printers, which wasn't really a big deal, but it was at a .com company I was working at. I forget how I stumbled across this, but it was somehow I figured out that the HP printers could accepted a command language on a certain port, and that if you sent the right command, you could actually change what was on the LCD display. So I wrote a little Windows service and fed it with basically a text file full of phrases. It would just select one at random and update the printer display a few times a day. So it would say things like "nice hair" or "take me home," and it was kind of funny at first. And so a couple of interesting things happened though. First, the developers in the area noticed it and thought it was kind of funny, and couple people tried to replicate it. But what was funny was that when one of the IT people came to figure out who was doing this, they came to me first and said, "We need to track down who is doing this so we can, you know, kind of make it stop." And I said, Yeah. Well, I think I know how they're doing it. And maybe if you just listen on this port, you could catch, you know, what computer it's coming from. So, of course, immediately after I told the person that, I shut everything down and moved it to a test machine that no one officially owned. And then that was at a .com. So, funnily, the interesting thing that happened there was that company shut down, and the company that bought our intellectual property actually hired me and a few other people from that company as contractors for about a month. And when I arrived at that new place after a couple weeks, I installed that service there and started feeding their HP printers with funny sayings. And it was just interesting. There was one lady who worked in the HR department, and this is after I quit contracting there, but she told someone else that I had used to work with. She said, "I really like this printer because it says such nice things to me every day." Then I put that code up on Ode to Code years and years ago. It was one of the first articles I published there, I guess. And I still occasionally, every few months, get an email about it. The one that almost made me take it down, it was an email from someone who was in the IT department for the Board of Education at some county in California, who said students had, were using the code and putting all sorts of foul messages in all the high school HP printers. And, you know, what can she do to stop it? And I didn't really have a good answer for her, but it's still up there. I just hope people use it for good and not evil.
That's excellent. Did you ever, like, make a personalized message for somebody as they were walking up to the printer? So it would be like the printer was talking to them? You know, like, "Hey, John, I had a problem printing this out."
No, I never did that, but I did definitely tweak the messages to fit the environment. So when everything was going well during the internet bubble years, they were very chirpy, happy messages. And, you know, by the time we reached that point where we knew we were going to be shutting down, we knew we were in trouble, the messages were things like, "Buy me for a dollar," or, you know, things like that.
That's funny, because that's the first place. I'm sure I'd seen your name before, but that was the first time that I started following your blog, was when I saw that somebody linked to your article about that. And I thought it was awesome. And I wrote a console app at my desk where I could just pop it open and type in a message, and it would show it at the printer. And the printer was about 15 feet away from my desk, and it was right outside of our manager's office. And it was kind of a... It was a good group, but it was a little bit of a stuffy financial institution. And so you know, everyone were like button downs and ties, and you know, it's kind of, and so it was just really fun to, and so I was able to, as people walked up and got something out of the printer, I would say like, you should have spell checked this, and I'd put their name in, you know, and then like as soon as and then they'd be like, hey, look at this. And I'd quickly change it back to, like, you know, PC load letter or whatever. And it was just, it was great, you know, to just, like, type it. And then I kept doing it to the same people, you know. They'd be like, did you see that? There's something messed up with this.
That's awesome. Yeah, because the places I ran this, I could never see the printer. So it was actually very rare when I would catch someone new coming up to the printer and be shocked at the message. But there was another place I worked where we had what I would call the Snoopy printer lady. So there was, you know, one printer in the building, and whenever something would be coming out on the printer, I noticed that this one woman who worked at the company would always run over to the printer and look at things. And ostensibly because she was going to take the print out to whoever printed it, but she kept looking at the paper a little too long. So I, you know, got the feeling she was sort of becoming like a voyeur. Trying to figure out what people are printing out. And I could see that printer. So, of course, I started sending off print jobs from test machines that would be, you know, things about how do I stop an office romance? Just to see her expression if she would walk over to the printer and look at it. And you could just see it instantly. It was like it was killing her, you know, to find out who was behind this. And she couldn't exactly take that piece of paper and, you know, walk up to someone and say, hey, did you print this? I was just dropping it off for you. But the curiosity was killing her.
Another thing that I had fun with that was semi-harmless, but, you know, depending on the situation, could have gotten me in trouble, was sending emails from servers. I'm sure that most developers, once they learned how to send an email, and, you know, for me, it was classic ASP, but, you know, it's like, well, hey, I could send an email from the boss to so-and-so, you know? And so, like, I would do that, and then people would be like, hey, you could actually get in some trouble there, you know? So this company I worked at, they had a package office that would accept shipments for people, and they must have just learned how to do fonts and colors in their emails, because they sent off the silliest, like, it looked like your third grade teacher had sent you an email, you know, it said like, a package, you have a package, please come to the package office. And so I copied the HTML for that and put that up on this test server, and I had a web page where I could just type in a person's name and email address, and it would send them a package email. And so I would, you know, just randomly, it's 3:30 in the afternoon, things are getting slow, you know, I'll just start sending people packages, you know, and everyone would pop up from their desk and run and get their packages and come back and be like, man, that package office is all screwed up. I don't know what they're doing. It's not really a high tech joke. That was just killing the pain, but it was fun.
About the only thing malicious I've ever done in an office is used to work with a guy who hated Visual Basic. I mean, just hated it with a passion. So when he went on vacation, we went throughout the entire company and found every VB book we could find and jammed them into his office for him. He was quite irritated at that.
A couple of guys were going back and forth at work, and it's always fun when geeks fight. And these two guys, one guy would always listen to music just really loud on his headphones. And it was kind of a cramped room. There were three developers in there. And this one guy had headphones on, you know, but they were loud. And he was always listening to, you know, techno and trance just blasting. So this other guy wrote a Windows service that would control his volume, his system volume. And he set it up so it listened on a port. And so from his computer, he could just browse to a web page and type, you know, 0.9 or 0.1, you know, and turn the volume up or down. And so, and, you know, he's sitting right across from him at another desk. So during the day, you know, he would slowly turn it up, and then turn it off, you know, and then the guy would be like, what's going on with this? I need a new sound card. And then he would like slowly turn it back up and then up and down and stuff. So that went on for a couple of days. Everyone was laughing about that. And then finally this guy figured it out. And so then he hacked the other guy's website, you know, and just, he went with a very happy theme with rainbows and all this stuff. And so, so they were going, he was like, you know, they kept hacking each other's websites back and forth and stuff. So that was fun.
Was it your computer that got at the MVP summit that a bunch of guys redid the accessibility settings on you while you were away?
That wasn't me. About the only thing that happened to me at the MVP summit was that I left my phone out and unlocked at the table while I used the restroom, and I came back and I had Twittered quite a few things that obviously were on my heart, but I hadn't had the courage to say just yet. So that was fun.
So John, I've heard that that I think it's Vertigo where that they have a little tradition that if you walk away from your machine and leave it unlocked, that they have fun with you. I mean, obviously, I know you don't work in the Vertigo offices, but I'm wondering if you had seen that.
Yeah, the idea is there is that they send people will send an email, and usually it's a goat, and I don't know why it's a goat, but people will take a screenshot of a goat or a picture of a goat and send it out to everybody. Hey, I love goats. The idea I get is that's come from, like, that's not just a Vertigo thing. It's funny, but like after a while, maybe, you know, not being there, but it gets kind of old. I've worked at other places where they did similar things, and it wasn't that specifically, but if you left your computer unlocked, people would send things out. But, you know, honestly, I find that kind of annoying. Like, it's funny for a while, and then it's like, okay, really? How, like, what are you teaching me here? You know, like, that's kind of like breaking into someone's car, and, you know, I don't know. It's just kind of annoying.
Yeah, I don't really get that one. I've heard of that in other places, too. I can't say I really, like, that's just having to lock it on my machine every time I walk away from it is just a friggin' pain. So that would definitely, I don't think I'd enjoy that too much as a prank.
It's for the security paranoid, isn't it?
I suppose, but what are people going to do on my machine? That I mean,
right.
I don't know. Maybe if you work at a bank or something and you have permission to transfer money between accounts, but you know, I work at a software shop with other software developers who have access to the same stuff that I have, so.
There's this thing I heard on NPR a long time ago. It's called altruistic punishment. And the idea is, like, say someone cuts you off in traffic, you know, and the idea really is that you don't gain anything from, like, chasing them and honking your horn. But inside you think, I'm going to teach this guy because I don't want them to do this to the next guy. I'm going to teach them a lesson. You know what I mean? That kind of, and so you see it with, like, road rage a lot, but I think that people may do this security stuff from the same reason, like, well, you shouldn't be leaving your computer unlocked. But I agree, it's like you work at a company and it's not a high security facility or something. It's like, you know, the only people you have to fear are, you know, people that are going to send dorky emails. I don't know, I think it's a funny joke, but only for so long. You mentioned accessibility before. Accessibility is always fun. I've tried doing, like, remapping, you know, keys, which always seems fun, but it takes a little time, and I always seem to get busted in the middle of doing it and have to make something up of why I'm messing with someone's registry. So I've never actually pulled that one off.
So something on Stack Overflow reminded me of something else that we did. Years ago, I know a guy when the text-to-speech stuff first came into Windows through a COM API. He wrote a little Outlook plugin that when an email arrived in his inbox, it would read off the subject line. And so we waited till a day when he was having a meeting in his office and someone sent him an email that the subject line was just beer, 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 beer. So everyone sitting in the meeting could hear the computer all of a sudden just start talking beer, 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 beer. But that one might be lame. So.
I just have to mention that the lamest of all is Kevin, who has done absolutely nothing fun at work ever.
I know. I gotta say, I'm feeling pretty stodgy here. Yeah, I guess I just don't work with real pranky people. Which is not to say we don't have fun at work. It's just not generally prank-oriented fun, I guess.
Yeah.
Along the lines of fun, also outside of work, maybe, but. K-Scott, I've always enjoyed your end-of-the-year code puzzles where you'll say, like, what does this code do? and it looked like ASCII art or whatever. I'm guessing you put quite a bit of time into those.
Yeah, some of those. This year, I don't think I put as much time in as I ever had before. I kind of just cheated. And I spent, I was on a long drive somewhere, and I thought, I have to come up with something. Well, maybe I can just find some ASCII art and use Link to manipulate it. So I just, really the most time was spent on that was actually finding ASCII art that would fit in a blog post and wasn't too elaborate, but something that I could poke letters into it and pick them out with a link. But yeah, I think some of the years past, I think I put a little more time into it. Always doing something weird to print Happy New Year or something like that. And that was all inspired from the Obfuscated C contest, which I think the C Programmer's Journal or one of those old magazines, maybe it was even Dr. Dobbs, used to run to see who could write, you know, the worst looking C program. And it was kind of easy in C because with the preprocessor, you could do all, and macros, you could do all sorts of terrible things. They used to have a C pun contest too. I wish I could find some of those archives because some of them were quite funny. I remember there was one that involved a null character Terminator. Had something to do with Terminator, null, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, but I don't remember the whole joke at the moment.
You mentioned it in passing, but speaking of C++, there's a Stack Overflow question. It's number 65116. And it's just a listing of a lot of funny pranks people did. And one that's just very fiendish is pound define if while. So instead of executing an if, it's going to execute, you know, while the condition is true, continue to execute the statement, which is probably about as rough as you can get.
That's rough.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be neat, maybe in .NET, I guess it's harder to do some of these tricks without a preprocessor, but I had the idea once of adding extension methods for system.object and putting it in the system namespace so that would show up on every single IntelliSense box that ever opened up. You could put a funny message in there.
It's harder to play pranks while you're working remote. So, I mean, you can send funny emails or that kind of thing, but, you know, people may or may not get them. It's harder to do it when you're not face-to-face. And I had one joke which I schemed about for months, but it never ended up working. I saw this thing on ThinkGeek, and they have a thing called the Annoyatron, and it's a small microchip with a battery and a magnet and a speaker, and it will play a really high-pitched sound and then for like 3 seconds, and then it shuts off for a variable time between 5 minutes to like 12 minutes. And then it'll do it again, you know? And so it's like continues to, and so it's just high enough where like you'll notice it, but then if you try and find it, it's you can't guess when it's going to happen. And there's some really funny, you know, like reviews of, you know, things people did in their office. So I tried to play this on Jeff Atwood, and I kept, you know, like I would travel up there and then he would have been on vacation. And so I'd be like, oh, shoot, I'll get him next time. And then I would go up there and couldn't get into his office at the right time. And finally, I was there for a Christmas party, and I was like, oh, I'll put it up here, but Jeff's going to be gone on vacation for a few weeks. So I left it with somebody who was going to put it up. And then that kept getting delayed. And then finally, Jeff left to create Stack Overflow, and it just never happened. So somebody's got it in their desk drawer. But that's a great prank that almost, that just never was.
You know, it used to be funny in software was Easter eggs.
Yep.
But SynthOft is such a serious company now that I guess the only Easter eggs you're ever going to find are in, like, Xbox games. So I think there's some rule inside of Microsoft about if you're, you know, caught putting an Easter egg in a program, you're basically skinned alive.
Yeah, they've said that's for security because if it's, you know, if it's hidden code, then it's not tested and it's not, you know, government and different people don't want to buy programs that have hidden features that, you know, maybe may have security vulnerabilities and all that. But I would think that there's kind of there's different classes of software, right? Like Office and stuff. Right. And then, you know, maybe other things where it's kind of okay.
Right. I mean, it used to be everywhere, right? You used to have Windows Easter eggs and Excel Easter eggs. And
yeah, including some really elaborate ones. Like, was it Excel that had the flight simulator as an Easter egg? I can't remember if it was Excel or if it was... It was one of those.
Right.
But like, I mean, that... like, I wonder who has time to do that kind of stuff.
Right. But... I get, you know, like, I can understand two reasons for not doing it. Like, one is, you know, the, like, the security side, whatever, which is kind of lame, but you can sort of understand. But the other is like, if you're going to have Easter eggs in your software, it better be good software, because otherwise people are going to be like, okay, this thing has serious bugs in it, and yet you spent the time making this flight simulator. Or, you know what I mean? So it's kind of
right,
like,
right.
It's a good joke if you nailed the software, and not a good joke if you didn't.
People go nuts.
I don't think I've ever put an Easter egg in a program, which is bizarre. Like, I mean, I guess there's a little less, you know, if it's open source, people are going to find it pretty quickly. But still, I should have snuck something in sometime, and I don't think I ever have.
Yeah, I don't think I have either. Google always does fun stuff. Like, on they always have an... April Fool's Day joke.
Yeah. We were talking about this the other day. Or Kevin and Jeff and I went to dinner. And we were talking about this. Like, how they just go... Like, it's escalating, you know? Especially the game companies will do these huge promos for funny, non-existent games and stuff. It's gotten to be almost like where it's so expected that it's not as funny now. You know, it's like it's like when April Fool's comes, you know that Google has to have a funny web page or two about some fake product announcements. You're expecting it. It's, you know, and it's like, what'd they do this year? You know, it's, I don't know. It's like almost less interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes it feels a little forced. Like, they feel like they have to do something, and so whatever they do is kind of half-assed and not particularly entertaining. There's always one or two that are like over the top awesome, but nowadays you have to filter through a lot more chaff to find the weed, I guess.
I had this thing that I started to do, I don't know, a long time ago, and every year around April Fool's Day, I would start on it again, and the idea was like Spam Sharp, which was I was pretending like I had gotten a leak from this Microsoft research initiative, and the idea was that it would compile email contents, you know, into a very forgiving compiler, and if it compiled, it was spam, you know. And so, like, I came up with this thing where it was like you know, a bunch of key, like, basically mapping keywords that always appeared up in spam, like Nigerian, you know, phishing and all that stuff, and map those to, like, using statements and that kind of stuff. And I actually did that. I went into, like, I started learning about Antler and, you know, just, like, actually writing a compiler because I wanted it to be believable. And then my fatal flaw is that I keep getting deeper and deeper into it. And pretty soon I was writing a compiler. And then I finally just had to give up on it due to time. But for a while, every single year as it got close to April Fool's Day, I would, like, get out that compiler code and start looking at it more instead of just dashing off a quick, you know, 10-line blog post, which would have been probably better. But I learned about compiler technology, so that was fun.
Aside from pranks and jokes, what have you guys done to, you know, have fun at the office?
One thing that we've done at some companies is we'd play, like, you know, as soon as work, you know, as soon as the bell rang after 5 p.m., we'd have a big LAN game, play Half-Life or whatever, which is a lot of fun. Especially back then, people didn't have high-speed internet connections, and so, you know, you get a bunch of people on a LAN playing Half-Life and you know, 15 people or something, and that was a lot of fun. And then we got people got so into it that they started, like, making maps of our office at work. So then we're playing in the office, running around shooting each other in the office, which was a little surreal. Then you would leave the office at, like, you know, 7 p.m. and it's dark, and you just had memories in your head of shooting all your friends in the office. It was just kind of creepy. But fun. We're not really that fun people. We're not qualified to make this podcast. Oh, I've got one other one that I did. This goes back way back to the pranks. But I was learning about I can't remember the terms, office automation. And the reason was because I was doing some work where we were composing a document, and, you know, it had to do with, I don't know, monitoring of environmental levels of gas stations or something like that. It was really boring, but it prepared these huge reports. And that was one of the first major projects I'd worked on. Anyhow, so I had to learn quite a bit about VBScript and about office automation. So then I started automating Clippy, and I would go into people's I would make the default template for a Word document have all these commands, you know, and it would include things like, you know, after you'd been typing for 10 minutes, Clippy would pop up and he would just say, your document is no good. And then he would disappear, you know, or he would, the best one, I liked it, but it was just kind of strange, but Clippy would come up and he would just bounce around the screen and he would just play random animations. Like, you know, there's tons of animations built in. So that was kind of fun. Oh, and one other just also dumb prank, but also netsend. As soon as I learned about the netsend command, that was
oh yeah, I forgot about that.
And again, that's fun for a little bit until people are like, "Do not use the netsend command." The next person that does office policy is. It's probably good that I work remote. I'm not a good person to have working on a LAN.
That kind of reminds me of another situation where the company I worked for, we were in mortgage banking. So we would have these web pages that would show a house and the mortgage that was attached to it. So in the test system, I would find a house that was worth, you know, $500,000 or $600,000. Well, back then, maybe $300,000 or $400,000, and upload a picture to be associated with it that was, you know, like a trailer from a trailer park, just to be funny. But I actually got in trouble for that one because one day they decided to demo to some client on that test server, which they weren't supposed to, but no one really found those pictures amusing, so... I always like putting weird names and things on test servers just so people don't demo off of those. I've run into that problem a lot in small companies.
I've had the same experience. It's like from both sides, you know, it's like you want to put completely ridiculous stuff in there so people don't demo when they shouldn't. But then I also will find, you know, like I'll be working with developers and they'll start putting things that are like just generally unprofessional, and they'll put it in things that clients are going to see. It's like, you got to be like, okay, is this not going to, you know, if a client's going to look at this, assume that it's got to be whatever.
Right. Yeah. Last year I was building a dashboard to sell to hospitals. So ostensibly it was supposed to show things like emergency room wait times and things like that. But on the demo server, I put things like pizza delivery time and disco ball contusions. And of course that ended up getting demoed off of also somehow, which really irritates me, but I have to consider profanity soon.
Right.
And again, Kevin's got nothing.
Nothing.
I'm sorry guys. I'm not not doing much for you here today.
Yeah,
okay, I'll throw in one thing here. Just so I'm not a total stick in the mud. So,
oh, Kevin is on the show this week, by the way, everybody.
It's not in the realm of pranks, but just funny, having fun in the office. I, in a former life, back before I had a child, I used to play golf a fair amount, and I work with people who have been golfers in the past also. And so when we've for a long time have had sort of little mini golf games around the office. We call it cube golf. And I don't know if this is a common thing in other companies or not, but we definitely have fun with it. There's sort of two variations. One is plotting a really elaborate sort of golf hole around the office where you have to go down corridors and you know, through offices and under tables and, you know, like fewest strokes to get around to the finish of the hole, you know, wins the hole. And there's occasionally been gambling involved. And then the other variation is sort of a game of horse, if you guys are familiar with the game of horse with basketball. But with golf, you know, like putting at targets from around the office. Unfortunately, we just remodeled our office and they put in new carpet that the ball does crazy things on, like it kind of wobbles across the carpet. So it has ended our fun of cube golf, which has been quite a disappointment.
Oh no.
Yeah, it was kind of a crushing blow when we realized that they were going to take that away from us.
It was probably
the one joy that we have in our oven. No. Anyway,
I've got one other thing, and I'll probably paste this back when I was talking about email fun. But for a while, I was also sending emails by going to the postcard sites, you know, and it was like send a free e-postcard online. And to me, this was funny to send, you know, like I would just go to some like ridiculous like San Diego Zoo postcard site, you know, and send from one, you know, some girl in the office to a guy, I'm thinking about you, you know, and just like that kind of stuff. and then from the guy back to the girl, send something else. And then just kind of do that for a few weeks and then just watch them be really awkward around each other. So that was fun.
Dude, that is evil.
And then I didn't do this one specifically, but during the .com fun time, there was a we started sending emails from monster.com or whatever to a project manager in our office saying that she was being considered for a very high-powered position in Silicon Valley and it would pay, you know, a ridiculous amount of money and all that. But we needed to know that this person was, you know, capable of anything. And so we would, you know, like during the middle of the day, we would say like, stand by for your challenges. And then like, so she would get, and we would all plot about this stuff at lunch, but you know, it would be like, you have 2 minutes to call this number and sing a limerick about project management. Go, you know, and the, you know, and of course these are all sent from a demo server, you know, and stuff. And so then, you know, like and then she would like get up from her desk and like, I have to use the restroom, and she'd run out, you know. So this went on for like a couple of weeks where we just kept on randomly abusing this girl, but.
You are twisted, man.
Oh, my actually, God.
So that was fun. I didn't actually come up with this. I just helped think of some of the challenges. So, and then also, you know, along the lines of free things that you could send from work is magazine subscriptions. So I started sending, you know, like there were all these free deals, especially during the .com days where you could just get a free subscription to different magazines. So I was sending, you know, like Teen Magazine to this one guy, you know, that was pretty like straight-laced and uptight, you know, and he kept getting like all these teen girl magazines and stuff. So fashion beat, teen beat, whatever it was. So that was fun. All right. Are we out of prank material?
I think I am.
Yep.
We'll have to cut Kevin off because he could just go all night.
Yeah. Stop me before I prank again.
All right. So we're gonna do a three-man lightning round.
Yes.
The lightning round.
We need theme music for the lightning round.
I don't really have yes/no questions. Maybe we should just do it as like
what would be like ten. What's a little bit slower than lightning? It's not quite a lightning round. It's like a but there's still some urgency. It's thunder is a little bit slower than lightning.
The stiff breeze round.
The mild sense of urgency round.
Yeah, we can do that. That way you don't have to come down to just yes or no questions. All right, the mild sense of urgency round. So the big news this week was the Kindle 2 from Amazon. What do you think about it, Kevin? Is it something you'll buy or not?
Not. I think it's cool. I mean, don't get me wrong. And I think they made huge improvements in the hardware. I have a big stack of books already that I don't have time to plow through. I can't see, you know, buying a Kindle for the privilege of paying for more books that I'm not going to read. So, I mean, it's just not practical for me, which doesn't mean it's not cool. But I do think that they're doing some interesting things around this whole WhisperNet replication stuff, which I think could be really interesting, like not just having your content on a Kindle, but being able to buy a book and then being able to access it on your iPhone or on your, you know, from your desktop or whatever. That is very promising to me, because I do like the idea of being able to access those books anywhere. Like, it seems kind of ridiculous to me that, like, it always kind of killed me that you could buy an ebook, or you could buy a physical book, or you could buy both and pay more. It's like, if you're buying the physical book, shouldn't they just kind of throw in the ebook for you? You know what I mean?
Right.
Because it doesn't cost them anything. So that's always kind of bugged me. So if, you know, having access, not that they're solving that, you know, with this, but at least having more universal access to that electronic content would be appealing to me.
The one thing I can't get over is that I realize there are a lot of advantages to a Kindle over a netbook or an EPC, but I can't get over the fact that it's still more expensive than a lot of the small 8-inch netbooks and EPCs, even though, you know, it comes with the WhisperNet thing. But it strikes me as kind of odd because they can still get revenue from you buying books and magazine subscriptions. Anyway, what does John's sick, twisted mind think of the Kindle 2?
I guess I might like them if I don't really see how I'd use a Kindle. I have the same problem that Kevin has. I've got stacks and stacks of books that I'd love to read. I've got magazines that come in every month that I flip through and wish that I had more time to spend time on. So right now, like, my problem is keeping up with the information I've got rather than, like, getting access to more. And the other thing, and this is me, I don't know if this applies to other people in other circumstances, but especially with working from home, I'm always within 10 feet of one of my laptops or computer or whatever. And so, you know, it's like, I've got plenty of opportunity. Like, I'd rather read on a bigger screen laptop than on a Kindle. I don't want another device. So I'm trying to think, like, who's the ideal person they're selling to? You know, like, when would you read on a Kindle? Is it something where you'd read around the home or during a commute or what? You know, what's?
I think if you travel a lot, I think it would be awesome because you don't have to lug a big stack of books around with you.
Right.
That's an obvious one to me. The other thing that scares me about it is that I have a toddler and having, you know, another expensive piece of hardware for them to break. you know, I'm very cautious about that sort of thing.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I wish that, like, maybe, so there's the Kindle if you want to buy the device and you need something that's lightweight and small and all that. I almost kind of wish that they had a Kindle software solution where they'd say, okay, look, you're a, you know, a Luddite or whatever that's not leaving your house much, so install this on your laptop and, you know, you can still get the same experience. And I know there are, like, ebook readers. I know that I bought something and they wanted me to use the, I believe it's from Adobe, some kind of ebook reader thing. And I know that there's solutions out there that have all the DRM stuff and all that. But so I guess I wish that, like, there was a solution that's, like, with or without hardware, you can still use all the Kindle goodness. But I don't know.
What about you, K. Scott? Are you going to buy one?
Probably not. Even though I travel a bit and it would be really convenient there. And I think it would be the one guy I know who uses his and loves his rides a Metro quite often. So he can just basically stick it in a backpack and hop on a bus or on the train and, you know, just get it out and start reading things. And the one I played with, the real advantage I saw in it was that e-ink is just so easy on your eyes. Like what I was saying earlier was, I can't believe this thing is so much more expensive than a cheap, really cheap laptop. But the laptop still has some display issues. I think the LCD kind of wears on you, where the Kindle really did seem like the kind of display that you could look at for a few hours without your eyes getting too tired. But I probably still won't buy one. I have a hard time getting through the books and magazines that I want to read right now. And the Kindle books and magazines mostly weren't the types of things I want to read anyway.
I've heard that for technical content, technical books, which is a lot of what I read, it's actually not that great. Like, it just doesn't render that stuff all that well. So that's a big turnoff to me.
Right. That's what I've heard. But I guess we're losing our sense of urgency here.
Right. Well, one other thing, I guess, is that also for the kind of books that are not technical, that are, you know, just neat things to read, I've been getting back into audiobooks a lot more. Partly this was because Zune started offering Overdrive. Overdrive.com has this thing where they partner with local libraries, and Zune added some support, which really just got my attention about it. But so, like, I listened recently to the book Predictably Irrational, which was just, I thought it was fascinating. It was one of those kind of like Malcolm Gladwell style, you know, cultural anthropology mixed with what's it called? There's some kind of economics, you know, like mixing economics with sociology and stuff. Anyhow, that was a great book, and I just listened to that on Books on Tape while jogging. I call it Books on Tape, although it's not. that's stuck in my head. That shows my
Books
age.
On Flash.
But so anyhow, I mean, for books, like the kind of like enjoyable books that I just kind of like to consume information, I'd rather listen to it than sit there and read it on a device.
So. All right, next topic. Google made a couple interesting announcements this week, or there was a couple interesting news stories that came out. One that I found interesting was that Apple, the rumor goes that Apple apparently asked them to not use multi-touch on the Android. I thought that was interesting. But they also announced that they would be providing synchronization for the iPhone with Google Calendar and Google Mail. And Google Contacts, and with your contacts, I think all that stuff. But the surprising thing there was they apparently bought or licensed ActiveSync from Microsoft, which I just thought was astounding. If only because if there's any piece of Microsoft software that has made me curse more than Visual Studio, it's ActiveSync, and I don't use it nearly as much.
Yeah, ActiveSync has been very frustrating to me over the years. I guess it keeps getting better, but it's never something that I love, you know? So it's just strange that it's becoming this standard. Maybe synchronizing is harder than...
That's what I started thinking, that it's got to be like the hardest software problem on the planet that we have to solve. And apparently only ActiveSync has solved that problem.
But
it partially solved it.
But partly, I think that it's because ActiveSync works with Outlook and Exchange. And so people, you know what I mean? And so people want ActiveSync only because that's going to get your Outlook stuff onto your iPhone and your Android and all that.
Yeah. Do you believe this thing about Apple asking them not to use multi-touch? Have you seen that?
I hadn't seen
it. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I believe it. I mean... Apple and Google have a really interesting relationship. They're very, I mean, they don't really compete with each other outside of the Android iPhone competition.
Right.
And, you know, they've collaborated on a lot of stuff. You know, the Maps app on the iPhone uses Google data, and, you know, they complement each other in a lot of ways. And so, you know, I can see them not wanting to step on each other's toes. It raised a very interesting point to me too, which is that, you know, Apple is building itself quite a nice little patent portfolio. you know, if they've got patents on multi-touch enough that Google, you know, didn't want to face him down on it. You know, that stuff's becoming, you know, big deal, and they that could end up being a very major, you know, alternative revenue stream for them.
This is interesting because since Android software is open source, people were noticing, and I don't know if it was a big deal back then, but I looking at a blog post from November 18 where they were talking about this, that, you know, Android had multi-touch if you uncommented a few lines of code, you know? So like if you just grabbed the source and uncommented some things, all of a sudden you had multi-touch, but it was just disabled. So this has probably been something that was out there for a while that just, you know, it's a scoop now.
Right. And the hardware, the phone hardware is capable of it. It's just disabled in the software.
It's always frustrating with phones and devices how much stuff is possible and just disabled or not available in software. I know, like, right when the Zune came out, I went and looked up that it was running on the, multi-scale. I looked up the platform, and I'm like, wow, it does this, 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 and this. But none of that stuff was used, you know. And, like, when you buy a new phone, you'd be like, oh, it has capability of this, 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 and this. But then, for whatever reason, your phone provider ships a ROM that has a lot of those features turned off. It's always strange with that. I guess at least, you know, maybe the nice thing with Android is that some of those people will, like, there's this whole subculture, there's this xda-developers.com where they do cooked ROMs. I don't know if you've seen that, but they basically, like, people will go in, they'll grab programs from different, you know, different phone operating systems, and they'll put them together and they'll cook up an actual usable one. So they'll say, like, okay, let's take the phone from what Verizon's shipping, and let's take what was out of the box from HTC for the radio, and let's take this from the camera, and we'll build our own window manager, and that's, you know, Duddy's cooked ROM or whatever. And it's like these people are just fanatical about it all, you know. And so that's always been kind of like this underground, like, I'm not even sure if it's legal really, because they're, you know, taking software that the EULA prohibits. But anyhow, going back to what I was talking about, like with Android being open source, potentially that's something where, you know, people will be able to just say, like, well, these are the features we want, you know, we'll enable them.
All right, next topic. So in other news, Microsoft announced recently the lineup of the Windows 7 editions. They're basically going to focus on Windows 7 Home Premium and Windows 7 Professional. Yet there are still a whole bunch of other ones like Windows 7 Starter, Windows 7 Home Basic, Windows 7 Enterprise, Windows 7 Ultimate. Which one are you going to buy, John Galloway?
That's a loaded question. Well,
yeah, see, the answer is none of the above, because right, you'll just get it in your MSDN subscription.
Exactly. I'll just get so. Ultimate. Yep. Yeah. I think,
but
that
this
go ahead.
I was gonna say, this seems to drive some people crazy that there's 7 editions. Does it drive you crazy?
It does. It drives me crazy a little bit. Actually, the thing that drove me crazy about Vista editions was the fact that they sort of bifurcated the feature set. And this is the thing that they're fixing in Windows 7, which makes me kind of okay with it. Where if you bought Home Premium, you got stuff that isn't in the Business Edition. And if you bought the Business Edition, you got stuff that isn't in the home Premium stuff. So the big thing there, for example, is if you bought Business Edition, you didn't get the Home the Media Center stuff. And if you got Home Premium, you didn't get Remote Desktop. So it sort of forced somebody who's, especially enthusiasts like me and like us, I assume, who definitely want Remote Desktop, but also want the Media Center stuff, to get Ultimate. And that was the thing that really irked me about, you know, about the way Vista was packaged up. You know, the enterprise features, you know, BitLocker encryption and whatever. I mean, that stuff I don't particularly care about. So, and apparently in Windows 7 they fixed it so that each more expensive version includes everything that's in the cheaper version. So professional includes everything that's in home premium. So I'll just get professional and that'll be fine with me. I don't particularly need to get ultimate, I don't think.
Yeah, one funny thing, and I don't know, I'm actually kind of surprised there hasn't been like a class action lawsuit or something about this, but Windows Vista had this Windows Ultimate Extras, and the idea was like, you know, that they were going to have these cool features. And if you look at what the Ultimate Extras were, they're just horrible. Like, okay, there was Dreams.
A joke.
Yeah, I mean, like, worst.
Texas Hold'em.
Yeah, it was the kind of stuff where, like, it was kind of crappy shareware level of stuff. The one, they finally recently came out with one thing called Tinker, which actually is a very fun game. And it's a bummer that it came out as a Windows Ultimate Extra at this point, because nobody installs Windows Ultimate Extras. And if this game was actually publicized, people would buy it. Like, it's a very interesting puzzle game. But then, so like, you know, my wife and kids love it, and we were telling our babysitter about it, and she's like, oh, cool, where do I buy it? I was like, well, see, you have to have Windows Vista Ultimate, and that costs this much more, you know, and it was like, oh, yeah, never mind. So I'm hopeful that, you know, that lesson's been learned, that it's going to be sold based on the features that are in the box rather than the promise of potential of some extras. I don't know. That was such a huge disappointment.
Microsoft has announced they're not doing the Ultimate Extras thing for Windows 7.
Good.
So, yeah, that was just comedically bad.
I think the uptake from the SKUs is that there's really the three SKUs that they're selling. And so, people get up in arms about, you know, there's still, they didn't learn their lesson from Vista, and, you know, but some of them, like Starter, I believe, is only sold overseas in order to keep competitive. So, I mean, if you sell Windows 7 for a couple hundred, $300 overseas, it's just not even possible. You know, like in some countries, that's, you know, your yearly wage or, you know, and so it's like, get the cost down a little bit. So, you know, so it's even remotely doable for somebody to buy it. So that's not even available in the U.S. So I think, like, if you filter it down, there's really just three SKUs that people can go out and buy. And then when you filter it down more, most people don't go and buy Vista, or go and buy Windows anything. They just buy a computer with the operating system pre-installed. So it really doesn't even matter that much.
True. All right. Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Herding Code. We hope you enjoyed it, and you'll come back next week. Peace.